Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank both Nancy and Leo for covering while various of us were not here, were away doing the practice circle. Just want to thank Bill. I know I've done this before, but I really appreciate the lovely way that you do these practice circles and the rich material that comes up during them. So again, just say thank you for that. And speaking of the practice circle, I know that I guess it was last week the practice circle focused on anger, and I heard that it was quite a lovely practice circle, and there was some good conversation about the emotion, anger. So since this issue of anger comes up not only in practice circles, but frequently in spiritual practice, I'd like to talk about it in the context of the precepts. Now, the Buddhist precepts have been described as one of the most vital areas of practice for students, regardless of whether they practice as lay practitioners or intend to take the vows of a monastic. Some people take a course and study the precepts. But anybody who takes up this practice, it was well advised to study the precepts, whether it's your intention to become a Buddhist or not. And these precepts are often defined as the life, the definition of how the life of a Buddha, how a Buddha functions in the world. They point to the way enlightened beings live their lives, relate to other human beings and to the planet, and how they make moral and ethical decisions, but in a particular way, in a connected and a compassionate way. So the precepts have no life without the sitting practice, because that's the spirit that they embody. And in our lineage, there are what we call 16 bodhisattva precepts: the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts. So it's the ninth precept that states, actualize harmony and do not be angry. Actualize harmony and do not be angry. Now, to me, there is a danger in taking these precepts too literally. Right? Do not be angry. And I say that because to me, anger is a normal human emotional response, and frequently, I think, appropriate. The challenge, though, is to understand our anger and to use this energy in a constructive way. So the question is, okay, so how's that possible? Well, firstly, we must get to know our anger. Does our anger cause us to fall into separation from others or the world? If, for example, a child rushes into the street risking their life, we may get angry at that child. But usually this expression of anger is from a place of connection, of protection, and caring. So the challenge is, how do we use that anger in that situation? Do we yell, scream, and berate the child for his or her transgression, which is really acting from a place of separation? Or do we try to impress upon the child how dangerous what they have done is in a compassionate, firm, instructive way, which I think is from a place of connection? I remember once talking with a good friend of mine who was really upset with herself, ashamed of herself, because she had gotten really angry at her husband. Now, her husband lived a lot in his head, and he had difficulty expressing himself, difficulty talking about emotions. And because she was requesting that of him, he ignored her. He dissociated, he checked out, in spite of several heartfelt attempts on her part to reach out for more connection with him. So her being angry seemed like an appropriate emotional response under the circumstances, especially since all she had done was to yell at him, that he kept treating her as if he didn't care, So I asked her, why was she being so hard on herself? And she responded, well, I failed in my commitment to live my life according to the precepts. She had a distant and aloof husband who, despite numerous attempts on her part to connect to him, he ignored her, and she became angry. And now she's feeling shame because she was not living her life according to the precepts. So from my way of understanding the precepts, this is a misunderstanding. I don't understand not being angry so literally and so lacking in compassion for oneself. It's human to get angry. The challenge is to not allow the emotion to cause us to feel separate. This is when it can become harmful. If I'm angry at you, and you're not me, then I can justify all sorts of harsh responses. If I'm separate from you, you're not me, you're that person over there, and I get angry at you, well, I can make all sorts of justifications. This is how wars start, when they're not us. This is how difficulty in relationships between men and women happen, when they're not us. And on and on and on, the list is endless. The precepts are often stated as do nots, do not lie, do not steal, do not get angry, and so forth. Regardless of how one chooses to state the precept, or the precepts, it's important that they are not chains. They are not just a list of do's and don'ts which can result in judgmental, self-righteous, and rigid behavior. In fact, the way that I understand the precepts is that they are about generosity, gratitude, and respect. And that's because they're grounded in our fundamental interconnectedness. The challenge is always, how do I function in this situation from a place of connection? Diane Rossetto, who wrote a book on the precepts called Waking Up to What You Do, says, a precept can be thought of as a beacon of light that can guide us and help us stay the course. It can show us the way, warning us to pay attention, to look, to listen. From this perspective, anger, shame, a variety of emotions become gifts. They become a way to learn about ourselves. The precepts are a reminder to still our minds and to not engage in life in our unconscious, habitual way. So if we do get angry, which is natural and normal, how do we keep the spirit of the ninth precept? Actualize harmony. Don't get angry. One way is to sit regularly, which will naturally make us less reactive, both physiologically and mentally. This is not, however, a 100% solution. So another way would be to really get to know our anger, which requires turning away from all our stories, all our justifications, all the ideas we have in our mind about how we are victims, and instead get curious about the anger which is in residing in us at any given time. Notice where in our bodies we feel that anger. What does it feel like to be angry? Does it stay the same or does it change? Does it subside quickly or does it stay for a long time? We can bring our attention to what thoughts we are having right before we became angry. And by bringing our attention to these thoughts, we can see the connection. Because usually emotions are a result of a thought. We have the thought first and then the emotion. So what is the thought that I had that caused me anger? I remember once driving to the Zendo on a Sunday morning, and on the parkway, a guy cut me off, and it was like, poof. And I thought to me, I was able to catch myself, the instant reaction was to be angry. But I tried to observe my mind and ask myself, okay, so what's the thought that got you so angry? And the thought was more of an observation that this guy was bullying me, that I didn't matter. So that became, instead of a reaction or response, it led to, instead of a reaction or response, it was almost, in a way, fascinating that a guy cutting me off, I was taking this so personally and so reactively. So that's what I mean about noticing. What is the thought that occurred before you got angry? When we are in the midst of our anger, we can also ask ourselves, how old are we right now when we are this angry? I know that in my relationship with Cindy, who is my wife, for those of you who don't know her, you know, you can't live in relationship with somebody day in and day out and not get angry at each other. And it's really a fascinating practice. If I find myself getting angry at her, and I ask myself, okay, so I'm angry, how old does it make me feel? And sometimes a number like 10 will pop up. And I'll realize that something she did reminded me of how my mother used to treat me. So I'm carrying that with me in my body. So again, it's another way that we can enlighten ourselves about how is anger working in our lives in a particular moment. And it certainly frees us up to not just be reactive. How many times have we reacted as a teenager? Right? Somebody steps on our toe, not literally, but figuratively, and we say, you can hear all the list of epithets run through your mind. You know, usually the F word is on the top of the list. You know, but that's a teenager. That's me behaving as a teenager. And of course, to be an effective human being, it's better to deal, not suppress the anger, not get rid of the anger, not feel shame because of the anger, but express it as an adult rather than a teenager. And an adult means from a place of connection and compassion. I can advocate for myself. I can speak for myself if I'm angry. But I don't have to do harm. I don't have to do it from a place of separation. So through this process of self-exploration, several things can happen. We can discover that exploring the emotion and not suppressing it can be freeing. We can discover that it's possible to be compassionate toward ourselves and our anger. And we can discover that this anger may really go back to childhood. Now, working with an emotion like this, there's a vague line that gets drawn. You know, a lot of teachers now in the spiritual world will talk about these things from a psychological perspective. And so with an emotion like anger, this can lead us to this sort of vague intersection between mental health and spiritual health. That our spiritual practice may give us the stability to work with deep-seated emotions and issues. And doing our emotional work can allow us the freedom to surrender in our spiritual practice. So there's this sort of crossover, but it's not clearly delineated. So we talk here on the cushion about emotions, which most people would, I think, agree is, you know, to a large extent, part of the psychological realm, the psychotherapeutic realm. There's no clear line that gets drawn. And a lot of times, sitting quietly allows us to become aware of intense emotion like anger. So we have to create for ourselves a model of when can we use our spiritual practice to tend to that, and when do we have to step off the cushion and work with it psychotherapeutically. And it goes back and forth, and one informs the other. And I'm going to end because I know that the practice circle that anger came up in was from the book Not Knowing. It's Not Knowing, right? Is it Not Knowing Most Intimate?
Most intimate.
The whole statement. Okay, so, which comes from a Zen koan, by the way. So Padankyo O'Hara from the village Sendo uses this group exercise regarding anger. Now, this is an exercise. We're not going to do it in the interest of time, but this is an exercise that is totally voluntary. And she goes around the room, and I'm going to guess that because of who she is, she doesn't just ask other people to do it. She does it herself. So it's totally voluntary. And she goes around the room, and she asks each person how they would express their anger if they really let loose. And as the story has it, one person in the room actually remembered the character in the movie Dr. Strangelove. I don't know how many people remember that. But who rode on top of the atomic bomb dropped from a plane which was falling to destroy the world. So that's really letting loose. And so her guidelines are to create a safe place, free from judgment, for each person to describe how they would express their anger if they could, followed by an internal evaluation of how they feel having done the exercise. So maybe someday we'll try that in a practice circle. We have brick walls here, so it's a pretty good container. So anyway, that's just a few words on anger in the spirit of what came up in your practice circle. Thank you.